Zimmel translate wolf is from theology. Zimmel, I'm actually reading it because right next to The Stranger, just right before, so The Stranger I've already recorded, so if you scroll through. But okay, this is called The Negative Character of Collective. The result of collective phenomena is achieved in several respects only through negation. More precisely, often they develop their negative character, the groups, which are their instrument, increase in size. In mass action, individual motives are frequently so different that their unification is the more easily possible, the more their content is merely negative, even destructive. The discontent that leads to great revolutions always feeds on so many, often contradictory sources, that their unification in favor of a positive goal is impossible. The construction of this positive goal, therefore, is usually the task of smaller groups and of innumerable individual contributions of divergent forces, which, if unified in mass action, would have only dispersing and destructive consequence. In this respect, one of the greatest historians said that the multitude is always ungrateful, because even if the whole is brought to flourish, the single individual nevertheless feels above all what he still lacks personally. The heterogeneity of individual, which leaves negation as the only common denominator, is shown very clearly, for instance, in earlier Russian revolutionism. The immense space, the cultural differences, the number of varying aims that dominated the movement, actually made nihilism, the mere annihilation of whatever was at issue, the correct name for the features common to all its elements. The same trait emerges in the results of great plebiscites, which so often and almost ununderstandably are negative. In Switzerland in 1900, for instance, a referendum simply rejected a federal sickness and accident insurance, which had been passed unanimously by both popular representation, the National Council, and the Council of States. And this also was the fate of most other bills subjected to the referendum. Negation is, after all, simplest, and for this reason, the elements of a mass can agree on where they reach no consent concerning a positive. The various groups which rejected the law on the basis of very different standpoints, particularistic, ultramontane, respecting the power of the Pope, agrarian, capitalistic, technical, party political, could only have negation in common. For the same reason, however, the sharing of, or at least negative characteristics by many small groups may suggest or prepare their unity. Thus it has been pointed out that Greeks showed both cultural differences amongst one another, but that both Arcadians and Athenians, as compared with contemporary Carthaginians, Egyptians, Persians, Thracians, nevertheless had many negative common. Nowhere in historical Greece were there human sacrifice, intentional mutilations, polygamy, the sale of children into slavery, or unlimited obedience to an individual. In spite of all the positive differences, this commonness of the merely negative was bound to make all Greeks conscious of belonging to a culture that transcended the individual Greek state. The negative character, the bond that unifies the large group, is revealed above all in its norm. It should be remembered that obligatory rules of every sort must be the simpler and the less voluminous, other things being equal, the larger the sphere of their application. There are much fewer rules of international courtesy, for instance, than there are courtesy rules which have to be observed within every smaller circle. Or the larger the states of the German Reich, the briefer, usually, are their constitutions. To put it in the form of a principle, as the size of the group increases, the common features that fuse its members into a social unit become ever fewer. For this reason, although at first glance it sounds paradoxical, a smaller minimum of norms can at least hold together a large group more easily than a small one. Qualitatively speaking, the larger the group is, usually the more prohibitive and restrictive the kinds of conduct which it must demand of its participants in order to maintain it. The positive ties which connect individual with individual and give the life of the group's real content must, after all, be given over to the individual. The variety of persons, interests, events, becomes too large to be regulated by a center, the center is left only with a prohibitive function, with the determination of what must not be under any circumstances, with the restriction of rather than a direction. All this, of course, merely indicates the trend of a development which is already crossed and deflected by other tendencies. The same problems arise in connection with the unification of a number of groups with divergent religious feelings or interests. Allah emerged as the general idea of God as such, so to speak, out of the decay of Arab polytheism. Polytheism necessarily engenders a split among its adherents, since, according to their different tendencies, internal as well as practical, they espouse the various gods in different ways. Initially, therefore, Allah's abstract and unifying character was negative. Its original nature was to hold men back from evil, not to urge them to do good. He was only the restrainer. Although, in comparison with all dispersing polytheisms and asocial monisms, as in India, the Hebrew God affected or expressed a consistency of the religio-social content unheard of in antiquity, he too delivered his most empathetic practical norms in the form of thou shalt not. In Germany, the positive life relations underlying civil law were unified in the civil code only some 30 years after the Reich was founded, whereas the criminal code, with its negative rules, has been uniformly enforced ever since 1872. The particular circumstance which makes prohibitions especially well-suited for expanding smaller groups into larger ones is that the opposite of prohibition is by no means always command, but often only permission. Thus, when in group A, A must lowercase, oh man, when in the first group, A must not occur, but B and C are permitted, and in the second group, not B, but A and C, and in the third group, not C, but A and B, etc., then the comprehensive structure composed of the first group and the second group and the third group may well be founded upon the prohibition of all the three A, B, and C. This unity, however, is possible only if in the first group B and C are not commanded, but only permitted, so that they also may not, if instead B and C are also positively commanded, prohibited, and correspondingly for the other two groups, a unity cannot be brought about because in such a case what is explicitly commanded in one group is explicitly prohibited in another. This scheme is illustrated in the following example. Originally, every Egyptian was prohibited to eat of a particular animal species, which was sacred to his death. Later, as the result of the political fusion of a number of local cults into a national religion, which was headed by a priesthood reigning throughout the nation, this developed into the doctrine that holiness demands abstention from all flesh. The unification could be brought about only as the synthesis or generalization of all the particular prohibitions. Had the eating of all animals permitted but not enjoined in every district been a positive command, evidently there would be no possibility of combining the particular rules of the various districts into a more comprehensive unity. The more general the norm and the larger the group in which it prevails, the less does the observance of the norm characterize the individual and the less important it is for him. Whereas its violation, on the whole, has consequences which are especially grave, which single out the individual from his group. This is quite obviously so above all in the intellectual field, theoretical communication, mutual understanding, without which human society could not exist at all, rests on a small number of generally agreed on norms, which we call the norms of logic, although of course not everybody is conscious of them in their abstractness. They constitute the minimum of what must be acknowledged by all who want in any way to communicate with one another. On them rests the briefest agreement between strangers and the common daily life of the closest persons. Thought would never coincide with empirical reality without obeying these elementary norms. Its adherence to them is the most indispensable, the most general condition of all sociological life. Logic thus cuts through the variety of worldviews, profound and shallow, and creates a certain common ground whose neglect would abolish all intellectual community in every sense of the term. Yet if we look closely, we find that logic gives us no positive possession at all. It is only a norm against what we must not sin, while we derive no distinction, no specific good or quality from its observance. All attempts at gaining particular knowledge by means of logic alone have failed, and its sociological significance, therefore, is as negative as that of the criminal code. In both cases, only the violation creates particular and exposed situation, while staying in the norm produces no more for the individual than the possibility of remaining within, respectively, theoretical and practical generality. To be sure, because of the thousand contentious divergences, intellectual contact may not come forth even if logic is rigorously observed, but if it is violated, communication is bound to fail. Just as moral and social cohesion may collapse for all avoidance of the prohibition in the criminal code, while it must do so if the laws are disobeyed. All this also applies to societal forms in the stricter sense, insofar as they are general in group. In this case, their observance is not characteristic of anybody, but their transgression certainly is. The most general norms of a group merely must not be transgressed, whereas, in the measure of their specialization, the particular norms that hold small groups together positively give their members character and distinction. On this situation rests the practical utility of social courtesy, which are so empty. Even from their most punctilious observance, we must not ignore any positive existent esteem and devotion they emphasize, but their slightest violation is an unmistakable indication that these feelings do not exist. Greeting somebody in the street proves no esteem whatsoever, but failure to do so conclusively proves the opposite. The forms of courtesy fail as symbols of positive inner attitude, but they are most useful in documenting negative, since even the slightest omission can radically and definitely alter to a person. And they both fail and succeed to the extent to which they are general and conventional, that is, characteristic of the larger circle. And that's it, making a rather simple but interesting point about negation. The collective actually has a lot of echo, other theorizing collection of his writing.